we're holding on Pei Dalet Omud Beis, about three quarters of the way down the Omud by the two dots. What is Gufa? Getting back to something that we talked about yesterday, Omud of Yehuda Omud Rav, Omud of Yehuda Omud Rav, who's Ruksheiris the Nasir Psil in the morning, Ali? We said that Sheiris, that women who are kosher, meaning Bnois Koyanim, are not also to marry, are not warned against marrying psulim, meaning even though, for example, a Koyan can't marry a Chalola, the flip side is not true. A Kohenes, a Bas Koyan, can marry a Chol. So the Gemara says, Lema Messiah, can we say that our Mishnah supports him? We said in our Mishnah, one of the cases was Cholol Shenosek Sheira. We said an example of a Cholol who married a Sheira, and we said that's an example of a marriage that's mutter. Now, my Rav, now wouldn't it be, when we say the word Ksheira, means Kehenes Haru'uyalai, that the word Ksheira would mean a Bas Koyan who is suitable for him, or my Ksheira, Ksheira Lakahuna. And the word Ksheira would mean that she is suitable for a Koyan. In other words, Rashi says, in what sense would you call a Bas Koyan more suitable for Kahuna than anybody else? After all, a Koyan's allowed to marry a Bas Israel. So Rashi actually brings from a Gemara in Psachim that says that other things being equal, a Bas Koyan shouldn't marry a Bas Israel. When a Koyan, Rashi says that the Gemara over there implies that when a Koyan is able to marry a Bas Koyan, then better he shouldn't be marrying a Bas Israel. Now, the Gemara doesn't actually say that in so many words. What the Gemara says over there is that a Bas Koyan should marry a Talmid Chacham and not marry an Amoret. But Rashi apparently is generalizing from that this is all. The reason why you have that is because, after all, when a Bas Koyan gets married, she loses the ability to eat Truma and Chaz V'Shoik and so forth, and therefore, like, she's getting downgraded. So if she's marrying a Talmid Chacham, then that's an upgrade, and that's a good thing, but otherwise, it's not so good for her to marry, otherwise not so good for the Gemara says over there, for an Amah Oretz to marry a Bas Koyan. So Rashi apparently is generalizing from that other things being equal, if she marries a Koyan, it's better, because then, after all, then she's not getting downgraded. Be that as
he can learn himself.
So you can learn a masechta. That's how they usually do it nowadays. When a chosin and kala get engaged, and the kala is a bas koyin, then the rebbe would usually tell the chosin to learn at least one masechta. Sometimes they learn masechta kala or something. Yeah, that way at least it can be called a talmid chacham. Be that as it may, the point is that therefore the daughter of a koyin, in a certain very limited sense, can be called ksheva l'kohuna. And the same that a cholol marries her, implying that a cholol is allowed to. The Gemara says, loy, not necessarily, Yisraelis. You could say that the word ksheira means a regular Yisraelis, or my ksheira, ksheira lakohol. We mean ksheira in the sense that anyone among the Jewish people, anyone among any Levi or any Yisrael or whatever can marry her. There's no restriction of whom she can marry among the kohol. So that doesn't necessarily prove that a kohenes can marry a kohol. Maybe only a Yisraelis can. Okay, the Gemara says, Yehochi yesh le'och kosher, nami. So what about, let's continue, that case, the Mishnah describes, one of the cases where she's mutter to her husband, but also to her yavam, is where she married a chol, where her brother was a cholol, then he has a brother who's a koyin, and we said she's also to him because she became a cholola by the cholol marrying her and having relations with her. So we said that he has a brother who's kosher, nami, so he's saying also kosher l'kohol. Are you going to say the word kosher means over there, kosher l'kohol? The cloud of apostle call. What are you implying, that a cholol is possible to intermarry among the Jewish people? Certainly not. A cholol is certainly not a psul kohol. All it is just he's not a kohen, and he makes his wife a cholola, but he's not possible to marry into the kohol. Ela lav kohen. Obviously, the word och kosher over there has to mean that the brother is a kohen. Umidahu kohen, he kohenes. And since you're saying that the och kosher refers to a koyin, necessarily, because otherwise you'd be saying that cholol is possible to the kohol, and he's certainly not, then when we say that she's a ksheira who married a cholol, then obviously it has to be that she's a kohenes. So in other words, so that would prove that a kohenes is allowed to marry a cholol. The Gemara says midi iria. What kind of a proof is that? Hakadisa v'hakadisa. Each one according to its thing. In other words, just because it uses the word kshera twice in that sentence doesn't necessarily show that we're talking about two or kosher or kshera, doesn't necessarily show that we're talking about the same kind of kashrus. The och kosher means that he's a kosher kohen. The kshera, the chol shanasa kshera, doesn't have to mean that she's a kehenes. It could just mean that she's kosher to marry into the kohol, namely that she is a, so she could easily as well be a bas yisrael. There's no so that's not a solid proof that a cholo can marry a kehenes. Okay, so now on the contrary, Mosiv Ravin Bar Nachman. So now on the contrary, Ravin Bar Nachman points out a contradiction. If you're telling me, so you're telling me that a kehenes is allowed to marry a cholo, but the Braisa says lo yikhu twice in the pasuk in connection with the restrictions on whom a kohen can marry. It says lo yikohu, actually it says lo yikohu with a comment under the kohen, whatever. The pasuk says isha zonah v'chalala lo yikohu v'isha grusha me'isha lo yikohu. So twice it says lo yikohu melamacher isha muzheres ayideh ish. That means that a woman is married, that a woman is warned, is also to get married to the man. Now, it sounds like, in other words, the first one tells us that the kohen is not allowed to marry a grusha or a zona or what have you, and the second one is telling us that a kohenes cannot marry a halala, which would contradict what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. The Gemara says, no, that's not what it means. Amar Rabba, kol heicha dehu muzer hi muzheres. No, what the pasuk is telling us is, wherever he is told not to marry her, then she is also has a warning. She's also usher to participate in such a marriage. Meaning, in other words, for example, a kohen is not allowed to marry a grusha, so therefore, so the issur is not only on him. If he marries the grusha and has relations with her, then not only is it an issur on him, it's an issur on her as well. Both of them are going to get malchus. That's the point of the second lo yikohu. V'chol heicha dehu loy muzer, he loy muzara. But if he's not warned against something, then she's not either. So in other words, there's no isser, the Torah doesn't say any isser on a cholol to marry a bas koyin. Therefore, there's no isser, so therefore you can't say that the pasuk is not implying that there's an isser on her to be married to him. No, there's no isser in that at all, so therefore that still fits with what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. So the Gemara asks, so you're telling me you learn that concept from here, that whenever you have an Isser Bia, that it applies reciprocally, that whenever the Torah says a man is also to marry such and such, only then are we saying that there's an Isser on the woman to be in such a marriage. But we don't need this part. So you're telling me you're learning that from the second law you call. We don't need that. We actually learn that from a different thing that Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rab. We also learn a braisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel that says the same thing, that when the pasuk says ish oi isha ki yasim kochatas adam, a man or a woman, if they do anything of the averis that a person might do, we learn from that the fact that it says ish oi isha hishra kosev isha leish b'cholonshin shematera, that the Torah equates a man and woman as far as all the punishments in the Torah. So from that alone, we know that if there's an Isser, for example, on a Kohen to marry a Grusha, then the Isser is equally well on her to be married to a Kohen. We don't need the second law you call for that.
It's so, a fundamental thing.
It's a fundamental thing, yes.
Is that a final on that one?
Yes. So actually, there's a Mishnah in Kiddushin that says the general rule is when it comes to mitzvahs eser, then we have the distinction that only that women are potter from mitzvahs eser shazman grama. But when it comes to Loisa, it says, with a couple of exceptions that it says in the Mishnah over there, we're going to discuss one of them in the Gemara over here. One of them is, one of the exceptions, for example, is that Koyanim are also to become Tamei Mes, but Koyanois are not also. The wives and daughters of Koyanim are not also. But with that and a couple of other exceptions, yes, all Loisa says that apply to men apply to women as well. And the punishments also apply equally to both one and the other. So therefore, we know it from that. So we don't need the second lo yikohu for that. So if we have the second lo yikohu, isn't that showing that you have something where even though the Torah doesn't specify an isser for a cholol to marry a kehenes, nevertheless it would be also by virtue of that? The Gemara says no. Imeahi, no, because if you only have the pasuk ish o isha that Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel is saying, havamin alav hashava makor. then you would think maybe that only applies to lavim that apply across the board to all Jewish people. So the lavim, for example, so when it comes to marriages, for example, that would include, for example, a mamzer or mamzeres. When it comes to other dinim in the Torah, other things that apply equally to men and women, av lav she'ena shavu b'kol. But the iser involving marriages of koyanim is specific to koyanim. Loi. So maybe you wouldn't so you wouldn't know that rule applies over there. Therefore, you need the loy yikachu to tell us that. It also applies to the marriages of Koyanim, that any time that a Koyan is also to marry a certain woman, then she is also to be married to him. But not that we would say, not that we would use the Lo Yikochu to create a new kind of Isser where it doesn't say anything about the man. So the Gemara asks about a Tuma, the Lav She'en Shavu B'Kol. Well, let's consider. We have the Lav where a Koyan is not allowed to become Tomines. That's a lav she'ena shavu b'kol. It's a lav that doesn't apply equally because it applies only to koyanim. The time of the kosu rachmona bnei aaron v'lo bnei saaron. And why do we say that only male koyanim are chayav in it and women are not? Is because the pasuk specifically introduces it by saying that emor l'koyanim bnei aaron, from which we learn v'lo bnei saaron, so it doesn't apply to the daughters of aaron, implying holav hachi havamin and nashim chayav. Now, if not for that, you would have thought that women are chayav. My timer. Now, why would that be? Lav mishum der Yehuda Manav. On the face of it, that would be because of the ish or isha. That one, we would have said ish or isha. Men and women are equally chayav in the lavim in the Torah. Since one of those lavim is that koyanim can't become tamimes, then that would apply to the bas koyan as well. And therefore, we need the word bnei aaron to tell us specifically that not. So in other words, we would see that Rabbi Yehuda's statement, we would see that the statement about Isha Isha does apply already to Lavim that are unique to Koyanim and not generic to the Jewish people. So once we say that, then we would have said the same thing applies to marriages as well. If rather we have an extra word, Lo Yikohu, doesn't that show that it creates an Isser on the Kohenis to marry a Cholom? The answer is Lo. The answer is no. The reason why it has to say bnei aaron, v'lo bnei saaron, on the contrary, digamrinin v'lo yikochu, on the contrary, we would have said that. So we would say that yes, we still stick to saying that ish or isha applies only to lava shava b'kol. But the reason, so why is it by tumo that we need a miut to say not bnei saaron? If not for that, then we would have said that. Then we would have said that it does apply to bnei saaron not because of isha isha, but because of lo yikochu. Because once we have the pasuk lo yikochu, which tells us that the restrictions on marriage apply reciprocally. When a koyan is also to marry a grusha, for example, then a grusha is also to be married to a koyan. We would have learned from that, and that's a lav she'ena shavu b'kol. So that we would have thought the same thing applies as far as tumah. So in other words, right now what we're saying is like this. Ish or Isha tells us by any law that's Shava Bakoil that it applies equally to men and women. So that wouldn't tell us anything, for example, about the marriage of a Koyan and a woman who's also to him. The second Lo Yikochu tells us that not only the man is also to marry a Grusha, but the Grusha is also to be married to the man. Now, once we have that, we would have thought the same thing applies to Tumah, and therefore we need the word Bnei Saaron to tell us otherwise. Ikadamni, another version of the discussion is the other way around. Ticha itzurichalai. The Ikadamni goes the other way around. The reason why it had to say lo yikochu is on the contrary. Sakadachamina ligma mituma. You would think on the contrary. Let's learn from Tuma. Once it says by Tuma bnei aaron v'lo bnei saaron, then you would think in that case maybe the same is true of all lavim that apply to koyanim. Maybe they apply only to the men, not the women. And therefore we would say, for example, that there's no issur on a grusha to be married to a koyan. She's not getting malchus for it. The only the koyan would get malchus for marrying her. Kamash malon. Therefore we need the lo yikochu to tell us that she does. So in other words, the bottom line is that the Lo Yikochu was not creating a new Isser where there wasn't one before, namely that a Kehenes shouldn't marry a Chalala. All it's doing is it's clarifying for us that when there exists an Isser already in the Torah for a Kohen to marry a certain woman, then the Isser applies equally to her as to him, and the penalties, the Malchus, are going to be the same for her as for him. But not but nothing to do with halolim marrying kohanis, where there's no issur in the Torah. It doesn't say that a halol can't marry a bas kohen, and therefore there's no particular, therefore there's no issur on who either. Loy hu zruk sheiris linasal psalm. So all told then, we have ish or isha teaches us that it's reciprocal as far as the other lavim in the Torah. Anytime a man is chayev on a certain lav, then a woman is as well, with certain rare exceptions. Lo yikochu, so, and then we said lo yikochu, and on the other hand, the fact that it says benois aaron, by tumah, those two tell us, putting them together, that the same is true as far as the surim of marriage for koinim, which is a lav she'in a shav bakol, but it's not true as far as tumah, and a bas koin is allowed to become tumah.
So, in a naive way, there's no mitzvah, leis hasei zman grama kind of thing.
Well, there definitely are mitzvahs leis hasei zman grama. For example, eating chametz on Pesach would be a mitzvah leis hasei zman grama. But women are chayev because it's a leis hasei. That's the point. That's the point that the Mishnah makes in Kedushin. And by the way, sometimes you have, once a woman is chayev in a certain leis hasei, then she becomes chayev in the eser that goes along with it. For example, pursuing that example, a woman is also to eat chametz on Pesach because isha, by virtue of that, she's also chayev in eating matzah the first night of Pesach because you have a hekesh between them. Because once you have one, the Torah tells us, don't eat chametz, eat matzah the first night, implying that anybody who's chayev to not eat chametz is chayev to eat matzah, and therefore that includes women as well, even though it is a mitzvah seser shazman grum.
And by Shabbos, it's a little bit different.
Shabbos, let's say, is the same example. Women have an issur to not do malacha on Shabbos. Lo sasekom malacha applies equally to men and women. And therefore, the mitzvah of resting on Shabbos also applies equally to both of them. And you get into a machloikas, whether they're chayim and kiddush, like men do, whether the hekesh extends to that. But that's a different matter.
What about the Shomer
Zachar? Shomer Zachar, that's what we're saying. So that's right. They're Chayiv and Shomer, therefore they're Chayiv and Zachar. But whether the Chayiv and Zachar extends even to Kiddush, that you have a Machlokes HaPosim about, which is why we say that a woman shouldn't make Kiddush for a man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What's the Hekesh for Shabbos?
Because by Shabbos you have Zachar and Shomer. So whoever's Chayiv and Shomer is Chayiv and Zachar. Zachar includes the mitzvah of making Kiddush. But whether that extends to the fact that they're actually chayev on kiddush on wine the way men are, there you have a machlokes about that. I once saw an interesting idea about
saying it in tefillah or not.
Not necessarily. However, there is an interesting there is an interesting point that I once saw now you think about it. On a basic daraisa level, when we say by chulu in Friday night davening, then we're yotze kiddush at that point, because the whole concept that there are rishonim who learn that the concept that you have to say kiddush on wine specifically is really only drabanim, that the zacharei alayayin is only an asmachta. So then it would come out at that point, having said by Yechulu, your chiyuv of kiddush is only drabanan. Now, what about your wife's chiyuv of kiddush might conceivably be daraisa still? So there's one of the achronim, I can't remember now who says a vorta, and it might have been the Briska Rav, I don't remember, says in that connection, what you should do, that's why it's important when you get home on Friday night, say good Shabbos to your wife, and she says good Shabbos. By that, she's acknowledging that Shabbos is a special day. Therefore, she's also been yotze kiddush on a basic daraisa level. Now, when you make kiddush for her, you're drabanan, and she's also drabanan, and therefore you can be motzi her.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
But
okay.
But let's
go on. Okay. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Rav Papa and Rav Huna b'Rei de Rav Yeshua iklu lehinsavu. One time, Rav Papa and Rav Huna b'Rei de Rav Yeshua visited the city of Hinsavu, or I guess how Bach changes it to Shransavu, where that's a more well-known place name in Gemara. Whatever. La'asrei de Rav Idi Ba'oven. Now, this was the city where Rav Idi Ba'oven lived. And as we're going to see soon, Rav Idi Ba'oven was an older Talmid Chacham of the previous generation. So, bo minahu, the people of Hinsavu asked the Papa and Rav Huna b'Rei de Rav Yeshua this question: Chuz ruchsheres leinasal psulim oloi? Do ksheres, do bnois koinim have an issue of marrying psulim? Are they allowed to marry halolim, or are they not? Are they also to marry halolim oloi, or not? Are they mutter to marry them? Amalahu Rav Papa. So Rav Papa tells them, Tinisua, you can learn it from a Mishnah in Kiddushin. The Mishnah says, Asara yuchsim olam mibadol. 10 classifications of Jews in terms of yuchsin came up from Badal to build the second Mishnah. Koyanim levim v'israelim, chalolim Geirim Harurim, Harurim are freed slaves, Umamzerim, Nisimim, Shsuki, Basufi. We learned in the previous Perek that a Shsuki is a child who we know who his mother is, but we don't know who his father is. So his mother had relations with somebody without clearly knowing who it was. So his father, his father might well be a Mamzer or something. And Asufi is a baby, is a foundling, a baby that was found abandoned in the street where you don't even know. He might be a goy altogether. Anyway, the Mishnah goes on to say,
the Shsuki, he knows who he is, but you don't want to tell anyone.
Well, right. So actually, by the Shsuki. So actually, the Gemara there in Kedushin discusses that you have an opinion of Abishol that says you can ask her, and if she says it was so and so, then we can believe her. Whereas the Chachamim disagree with that. The Halacha is in fact like Abishol, but yeah. Anyway, so yeah, you're right. We don't have to be talking about where she doesn't know. We could be talking about she doesn't want to say for whatever reason. Anyway, yeah. So, Kohenim, Levim, Yisraelim, Mutonim, Love, Zebazeh. So now, the first three are allowed to freely intermarry. Levim, Yisraelim, Charorim, Chalolim, Gerim, Charurim, Mutonim, Love, Zebazeh. And the next group are all allowed to intermarry freely. And the last ones, Charuri, Mamzerin, Nisini, Shsuki, Vasufi, Mutonim, Love, Zebazeh. Geri, Charuri, Mamzerin, Nisini, Shsuki, Vasufi, Mutonim, Love, Zebazeh. Now, Ve'ilu, Kohenes, Vacholol, Katonim. Now, what's missing from the Mishnah? You have Chalolim is the fourth one. We said Kohenim, Levim, and Yisraelim are allowed freely intermarry. It doesn't say that Kohenim can freely marry with Chalolim. And if they're particular, it doesn't say that a Bas Kohen can marry a Chalol. Doesn't that imply that she can't? So Rav Huna Ber Yehoshua says that's not a solid proof. Because you could say the Mishnah is listing Kol Heicha Dahani Nasvi Mehani. Dahani Nasvi Mehani Katoni. The Mishnah, when it says so-and-so, Mutorin Love Zebazeh, it means that it's reciprocal. Each one can marry somebody from the other one freely without any restrictions. So, for example, between Kohen and Levim and Israel, a Kohen can marry a Bas Kohen, Bas Levi, or Bas Israel, and a Kohenes can marry a Kohen, a Levi, or Israel. And the same thing with the next group, for example, when it says Levim, Yisraelim, Chalolim, etc., are allowed to intermarry, it means a Levi can marry a Chalola, and a Chalok can marry a Bas Levi, and so forth with all the other ones. Koyin, but when it comes to a Koyin, given the either boy, the mince of Chalola, Asirale, since he's not allowed to marry a Chalola, Loi Katoni, you could say that that's why it didn't list it. Not because a Bas Koyin can't marry a Chalol, but because the Mishnah couldn't have said, Kohen and Levim, Yisraelim, and Chalolim are allowed to intermarry because that would imply falsely that a Kohen is allowed to marry a Chalola, and that's not so. But it doesn't necessarily show that a Cholol is also to marry a Kohenis. Okay, so they couldn't resolve it. Also, Tamei of Idiba Oven, so they came to Rav Idiba Oven to ask him what's the story. Omelo, he says to them, Daudiki, children, they were much younger than him, and Rashi elsewhere explains that by saying Daudiki, also in effect he's saying, like, you know, you guys haven't really learned Svaris yet. You should know. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Hochi Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Loihuz Rukshayrus, the Nasal Psulim, there's no Issur on Kshayrus to marry Psulim, and that is the final halacha. Okay, Hennes is allowed to marry a Chol. Okay.
It's ironical because, All the children, the descendants of a Kohanes who marries a Chalol are going to be Chalalim.
Not actually all of them. To be exact, all of their male line will be Chalalim. All their female line will not. Yeah.
Right. I meant all the male line will be Chalalim.
All the male line, yes, will be Chalalim. Okay. So they'll be Chalalim, right. But that means...
Yeah, but that's a problem because they're going to terminate the Zera of Aaron. And why should they be allowed then?
The Zera of Aaron doesn't go through a woman anyway. Even if she married, even if the Kohenes married a Yisrael or a regular Yisrael or a Levi, their children are not carrying them anyway. So no, you're not taking away anything.
Yeah, but their children will be allowed to marry Kohanim, and the children of their children.
Okay, so in this case, only the women will be able to marry Kohanim, but that's not the men. But fine, but at least you'll have they could still conceivably have descendants who are Kohanim. Anyway, that's how it is. The bottom line is there's no issur in the Torah. It never says that a cholol is also to marry a kohenes, and it never says that a kohenes is also to marry a cholol. Therefore, it's allowed. Is it the best thing? Listen, I mean, we had Rashi saying before that other things being equal, a kohenes shouldn't even marry Yisrael. But other things being equal, if a kohen is able to marry a bas kohen, then that's better anyway. So other things, we're not necessarily saying that other things being equal, that a kohenes should marry a chola, but we're saying she's allowed to. Okay. Now, the Mishnah said, Shnius Medivah is Sofim Chola. We said that at the end of the Mishnah, that when we have the case of Shnius, we have the second level relatives who are also Medrabanan. So we gave an example. Let's say Medaraisa, you know, a man's not allowed to have relations with his mother, but Medaraisa, he would be allowed to, with his grand, he'd be allowed to marry his grandmother, but Medrabanan not. So now we had examples in the Mishnah. That let's say the Yevamah that we're talking about over here was a Shnia to her original husband, but she's not a Shnia to the Yevamah. So let's say we said you have two brothers from the father who have different mothers, and one of them married his mother's mother, which is also to him, Midrabanan. Then he dies. Now she's up for Yivam to his brother. There's no relationship between her and his brother, and therefore his brother is allowed to marry her. So then we said we said in the Mishnah that would be another example of Asura Lodbal or Materas the Yavam and so forth. And then the Mishnah had gone on to say that when she's a Shnia, the Mishnah had said that she has no Ksuba and no Peris and no Mizonis and no Blods. So let's discuss that in more detail. We said Shnias Medivah is Sefer B'chola. So Boivine Bnei Biri Merav Sheshes. The people of Biri asked Rav Sheshes the following question. Now, by the way, I mean, a couple of days ago, we had Biri, a place in Eretz Yisrael, where we said there was a tumtum from over there who was operated on and had children, and the question was whether there really is children or not. That Biri was the pastor's place in Eretz Yisrael, because we quoted it in a braisa here, where they're asking Rav Sheshes, more likely it's a place in Bavel, because Rav Sheshes lived in Bavel. Anyway, so they asked him, Shneel Abavla Shneel Yavam. Suppose we have the case of our Mishnah where the woman is a Shneel to her husband and was also therefore to marry him. For example, again, she's his grandmother, but she's not a Shneel to the Yavam. So we're saying in the Mishnah that she's Mutter to the Yavam, meaning that the Yavam can do Yivam with her if he wants. So in that case, the question was, Yesh Laksuba Mi Yavam Olam. Is she, the case is, again, that you have The case is, again, that you have two brothers from different mothers. So let's call them, for example,
Is
she entitled to a ksuba from the yavam, given that she's mutter to him, or not? The sides of the question are, on the one hand, kiven de omer ma'ak subos al nixe by the Ogushin, we learned earlier in the Masechta that the ksuba of a yavam, that the ksuba of a yavama, rather, when yavam is done, is against her original husband's property. In other words, the yavam doesn't necessarily have to write her a new ksuba. The ksuba payout is going to come from the nechasim of her original husband. So therefore, in this case, over here, lechla, then she wouldn't have, because there was no ksuba on her first husband's nechasim because she was a shnia to him. And as we said in the Mishnah, shnia has no ksuba payment. Or maybe we say, even the ilu less lamedushin. The fact is, we also say in that Gemara over there that let's say she doesn't have a ksuba from the first one. One example would be if the first husband didn't leave nechasim out of which a ksuba can be paid, then takinu lo rabbanim b'sheni. Then the chachamim made a takana that she should have a ksuba from the second one, from the yavam. Well, then isla. In this case, also she doesn't have. So which is it? Does she get a ksuba payment or does she not? So Rav Shesha says, well, we can answer it based on a braisa. A braisa says, Ksubasa al nichse baile avishin. The ksuba is paid out of the nechosim of her first husband. The im hoisa shnia labal afilu mi yavam emlo. If she was a shnia to the husband, then she doesn't even get from the yavam. So that answers that. Yes, if she was a shnia to the husband, even though she is perfectly mutter to the yavam is not required to give her a ksuba payment because her original marriage, by virtue of which he's doing yibum, was also. Although this is
punishing her from the grave.
Not really punishing her from the grave, but it is to a certain extent a knas on her, as the Gemara is going to discuss soon. Why is it that we penalize her in these various ways? We're going to get to that point soon. But one thing is that Amma does point out in Shulchan Aruch, practically speaking, a couple is also to live together without a ksuba. So therefore, if they're going to stay married for any length of time, he's going to need to write her a ksuba anyhow. because otherwise they can't stay married.
But he can make up the amount.
He can make up the, no, not he can make up the amount. Pashtus, it's the usual thing that if it's less than 100 for Ba'ula or 200 for B'sula, then it's Be'ilas Nus. So there wouldn't be that much difference. Nafkamina would be, let's say, for example, if he does Yibum with her and then dies shortly afterwards, let's say divorces her shortly afterwards, before they have a chance to write a ksuba, then she's not entitled to a ksuba payment.
The next guy has to.
This is the Yavam we're talking about. Yeah.
The
Yavam.
The
first guy, well, they were supposed to get divorced in the first place. They had no business getting married in the first place, right? Okay, so the Gemara says, fine. So that Braisa answers the question, but there seems to be something odd in the wording of the Braisa. The Braisa is saying, afilu mi yavam ema, implying that in general she would get a ksuba payment from the yavam, but we established before that it's not so. In general, a ksuba payment is from the first husband of the chasim. So, miklal de'ika de'islam yavam. So, does that imply that there is a case where the woman gets a ksuba from the yavam? And the answer is, yeah, ksuri mechsura. The Braisa is missing a phrase. It means to say like this. Ksubosal nichse baile al-rishad. The ksuba is against the nechosim of her first husband. The e less from erishin. But if there's no nechosim from the first husband, takina lomisheni, then the chachamim usually made a takana that a yavama gets from the second one, from the yavam. But the imhoisa shniya labal. But if she had been a shniya to her first husband, afilu yavam ema, then she doesn't even get from the yavam because then there was no, she had no ksuba from the first marriage. In other words, when do we say that the yavam writes a ksuba? Only when there should have been a ksuba from the first marriage and it wasn't able to be paid for whatever reason, but not in this case where there was not supposed to be a ksuba from the first marriage at all because it was a marriage that was be'isu, that was also dirabam. So therefore, so again, so she doesn't get a ksuba from him, although again, then Amar points out, if they're going to stay married, then he doesn't have to write a ksuba just because of that. But yeah. Okay. Next. Bominei Rav Elazar ben Avichai. Alman l'kohen gadol grusha v'chalutz l'kohen hadi. Suppose that we have one of the cases that we said earlier in the Mishnah before, where there's an issur lav in the marriage. So just now we were talking about shnias, which are also only dirabanan. But now let's talk about issurei lav. We know that she doesn't get a ksuba, because again the marriage was also. But is yesh lahen mezonis or ein lahen mezonis? Are these women entitled to mezonis, to support from their husband while the marriage is still going on or not? So the Gemara says, hey, if you tell me, what's the scenario? Ilema de yasbe tose, are you talking about that she is still living with him and he's in town and she's in town? What do you mean? Why should she get mezonis? He has a mitzvah to get up and divorce her, and Beis Din is going to be working on forcing him to divorce her. Of course she doesn't get mezonis. If she comes to Beis Din to demand mezonis, Beis Din is saying, what do you mean mezonis? Your husband has to divorce you anyway. You're not monolach and gadol, etc. So the answer is loy tzricha, yes, but the point of Rabbi Lazar's question is, suppose that her husband went overseas. So right now we're not in a position to force him to give her a get because he's not here. And the Beis Din overseas doesn't necessarily have a way of knowing that he's, now remember this is before Cherem Diyar Ben Gersh, doesn't need her consent in order to give her a divorce, but they still, the local Beis Din has to know that there's a situation to force him to do it. They may not know of it. So he's out of town, she's here in town, she borrows money in order to support herself. Tosfos discusses that there can be a distinction whether Beis Din supervised that or not. But in any case, the point is that if we're talking about over here, should Beis Din, given that her husband is out of town, it's true Beis Din is, the local Beis Din is going to say she's supposed to get divorced. But right now we're not able to do that because her husband is out of town. We can't leave her completely high and dry. So therefore, do we arrange mezonis for her? Do we arrange that she should borrow money in order to support herself? And later on, when her husband comes back to town, then we will force him to repay those debts and also to divorce her. So do we do that or not? So that's the question. My mizonis tnoi ksuba minu. The question is mizonis one of the tnoi ksuba, and therefore mid isla ksuba isla mizoni. And therefore, in this case of an isla lav, she does have a ksuba, because even though they're required to get divorced, she's still entitled to a ksuba. We're going to discuss at the bottom of the omud. We're going to start discussing why is it that an isla lav has a ksuba, but an isla shniya does not have a ksuba. We're going to get back to that point soon. But the point is, on the one hand, given that she has a tzuva, if or mizoni, then mizonis are one of the tznoi tzuva, therefore she should have that. Odoma, or maybe the difference is tzuva de la mishkal umeipa. You know what the difference is? What's a ksuba? Is she's going to take it and she's going to leave. A ksuba, one of the cases where ksuba is paid out, is when the husband divorces her. So then in that case, so in other words, the ksuba is not something that she's entitled to a payout and can still stay married. By definition, for the ksuba to be paid, it means that the marriage is over. So then you can say isla. So then you could say that we allow her to collect that. But mizono, but when it comes to food, when it comes to support, maybe we don't want to do it. Jomati akiv gabe, because after all, she might then decide to stay by him. The longer she stays, the more support she's going to get from him. So she may have an incentive to stay in the marriage and not to try and not to want to get divorced. So maybe therefore, so maybe therefore we shouldn't give her mizonos. So Rabbi Yechanan says, in fact, the din would be that she doesn't have mizonos. So, Vatanya Yeshla, don't we learn in a blight that she is entitled to mizonos in such a case? The answer is Kitanya Hilachamisa. The answer is that blaisa that she's entitled to mizonos is talking about after her husband died. So if he died, then as long as she remains a widow, the rule is in general that a widow is entitled to the ksuba, and she's also entitled to mizonos. We're going to learn about it in Masechta. We're going to learn about it in ksuba, Spes Hashem, that during the time of her almanus, she's entitled to mizonos. Well, then in this case, she's entitled to mizonos. You can't say that she might stick around as a result of that because he's dead. But if he divorces her, not necessarily, or as long as they're married, not necessarily is she entitled to mizonos. Is the Omar, then there's another version of the discussion that says Omale, that Rabbi Yochanan answered Rabbi Elazar, Tanya, Yeshla, or maybe that Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Yochanan, isn't there a braisa that says Yeshla? What do you mean? How does she have mizonis? Isn't he required to divorce her? Why is based in arranging mizonis? So the Ella Hotanya Yeshla. So Taka, why does it say Yeshla? And the answer is Kitanya Hilacha Misa. So either way, it comes out to the same thing. It's just a different lotion of how they arrive at that. So according to the second lotion, what it is that to begin with, Rabbi Yochanan had told him Yeshla, and he asks him what do you mean? So Rabbi Elazar asked him, why should there be Yeshla? Amoid Bahotze. And the answer is it means Yeshla only Laacha Misa. So either way, it amounts to the same thing. While her husband is alive, she's not entitled to mizonis, but once he dies, then yes, she's entitled to mizonis during the time of her widowhood until she remarries. Okay. Turn it up, Bonham. Now, this is an Isser Lag we're talking about. Isser Shnius is something else. Isser Shnius, we're going to talk about this. So turn it up. Isser Shnius is something else. The Or Mishnah had said that Isser Shnius doesn't get mizonis for reasons that we're going to discuss now. So So again, if you have a marriage that was done to Isser where there's an Isser lav involved, Yeshla Ksuba, Peres Mizonis Blois, she does get a Ksuba. She does have Peres, meaning that if the husband ate Peres from her Nechosim, now they weren't supposed to be married, nevertheless, she is entitled to reimbursement for those Peres. Because as the Gemara, now what the Gemara is going to discuss in the beginning now at the bottom of the Amud is one point is you have to consider which one of them should be penalized for this marriage that was the issue. On the one hand, we just established before that when a Kohen marries a Grusha, for example, each one of them has done an issue. But which one has more of an incentive to do the issue that therefore we say if we don't penalize them, then they're going to go ahead and do it. So that's what we have to figure out. For example, as far as payers. On the one hand, we want to penalize him to pay back for the payers that he ate. On the other hand, we might want to penalize her and saying that she doesn't have to pay her back. So that's what we're going to figure out. So she's entitled. So right now we're saying she's entitled to payers. The mizonis, she's also entitled to mizonis, as we said, specifically after he dies. Blois, and she's entitled to blois. We said blois means worn out things, and we discussed in the Mishnah what Rashi had said on the Mishnah. We learned yesterday that there are two kinds of blois. There's one case where they're completely worn out, and the husband has to repay her for them. And there's another one, which is called bloiser kayomin, where they're worn out, they're depreciated, but they still exist. Is she entitled to take those when the marriage is over? So Rashi had said on the Mishnah that when it came to the Shnia, that it means that blois means even bloiser kayomin. Tosfos disagrees with that and says, Bloisel Kayomen, she's going to be entitled to regardless. There's only certain rare cases, for example, if she was Mizana, where she loses Bloisel Kayomen. But, so we're talking about over here blois, things that were completely worn out and used up, where normally the husband has to repay her for them when they're part of Nichsetza and Barzal. So in the case of the Shniyah, he doesn't have to. But in the case of Amon of the Kohen Gadol, he does have to. Next, continues the Braisa, the Hipsula of Lod Apostle. She herself becomes possible to ever marry a Kohen again, because having married a Kohen the Isur, then she becomes a Chalala, and therefore she's also to marry a Kohen in the future. And her children are possible because they're Chalala. The Kohen knows from Haitzen. And we're going to force him to divorce her because of the Isur Lodim here. On the other hand, Shnias Medivre Sokrim, when the Isur was of Shnia, for example, as we said, let's say his grandmother or any of the other 20 or so Shnias that we learned about in the second parak, Ein la Ksuba, then she's not entitled to a Ksuba payment. Loi Peiris, she's not entitled to Peiris from her Nechassim, meaning that the husband doesn't have to repay her. He shouldn't have eaten the Peiris because it's not a valid marriage, but nevertheless, he's not required to pay her back for reasons that we're going to discuss soon. The loy mezonis, she's not entitled to mezonis from him. The loy blois, she's not entitled to the blois, depending on the points of Rashi and Tosfos, which kind of blois we're talking about. The hiksheira, on the other hand, she's kosher. There's no, the fact that there was an isur drabonin over here doesn't make her osur in the future to marry a kohen. She's not considered a zono or halala or what have you. Or vlada kosher, the children are also kosher. The chachamim did not impose that a shnia. Now, in the case of a shnia, the chacham did not impose that the child is going to be a mamzer with the rabbanon or something. So therefore, the child's completely kosher. But again, the koyfen oser lahotzi, we do force him to divorce her, because after all, there's an issur drabbanon. So, amr of Shim ben Elazar, mitnei ma omru amon lekohen gadol yesh la ksuva. Why did the chachamim say that an amon lekohen gadol does get a ksuva? After all, there's an issur there also. Why should she be entitled to a ksuva payment? The reason is, mitnei sho hu posel v'hi psula. The reason is because there's a consequence for each one of them. Each one of them becomes possible. He becomes possible in the sense that he can't do the avodah as long as he's married to her, and she becomes possible because she becomes a halala. So therefore, there's less likelihood that this marriage is going to last very long because both of them have an incentive to get, both of them have an incentive to not do it in the first place, and once they did, to get out of it, therefore we do assign her a ksuba. Tosfos discusses that no, who posel doesn't necessarily refer to the husband. It means the child, that the fact that the children are going to be halalim, that might discourage her from doing this in the first place, and therefore we don't have to further penalize her by making her lose her ksula. B'chol makom shehu posel v'hi psula. So whenever he and she are posel, the he being the husband according to Rashi and the child according to Tosfos, and she's posel as well, says Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Konsu oisai ksuba. Then the chachamim penalize him by making him have to pay her the ksuba. In other words, we don't want that marriage to last. We don't want that marriage to last. She's going to think to herself that. So it's like this: when we need to incentivize that she should leave the marriage, that she should go to Beis Din and demand a divorce, then we need part of that incentive will be that she'll lose her ksuba. Here you don't need it because since he becomes possible, Rashi again continuing the shita say that we mean the husband is possible to do the avoda, therefore that's more likely to cause quarrels between them anyway. And the fact that she's postal also, she's going to argue with him and say, you know what was I thinking when I married you? Now I became postal to ever marry a Kohen. So therefore, for that reason alone, this marriage is not likely to last very long. Therefore, the Chachamim do not have to penalize her by making her lose her ksuba, because in any case, they're probably not going to stay married for very long. On the other hand, continues Rav Shimon Elazar, so why by shnius do we say that she doesn't get a ksuba? Because everybody is kosher. He doesn't lose any privileges as a result of marrying a shnia. She doesn't lose any either. She's kosher to marry a kohen afterwards. The children are also kosher, he said. Then we do penalize her by losing her ksuba. Now, once there's no ksuba, she's more likely to say, you know what? What am I staying in this marriage for? What am I getting out of it anyway? I don't even get a ksuba payment in the future. So therefore, she's more likely to say, you know what? I want out. Let me go to Beis Din and demand a divorce and tell them that we're shnius and we shouldn't have gotten married in the first place. Remember, the local Beis Din may not know that they're shnius until they're informed of it. So like this, there's an incentive by making her lose her ksuba. There's an incentive for her to go and seek a get, as opposed to by the as opposed to Almona Kohen Gadol, where anyway they have an incentive to be out of it, because as long as they're married, he's possible. She has become possible by that marriage, and the children are going to be possible, so she has an incentive anyway to go, or both of them have an incentive to make the marriage be over, therefore we don't have to penalize her by losing the ksuba in order to incentivize her for that. So that's one reason. Rebbe says there's a different reason why there's the distinction between the Amon Lekoyim Gadol versus the Shemis. Halolu divrei Torah of a divrei Torah in Tzrich and Chizuk, because the issur of a Kohen Gadol to marry an Amona and a Kohen Hed to marry a Grusha and so forth is midat Torah, the divrei Torah in Tzrich and Chizuk. Laws from the Torah don't need to be further strengthened. So therefore, once we have, in other words, the fact that there's an issur midat Torah over here, that's strong enough to prevent that generally such a marriage is not going to happen, and that if it does, it's going to be over very soon. Therefore, we don't need to further buttress it by making her lose her ksuba. Bahalolu divrei seifrim, as opposed to the shnei, is only the divrei seifrim tzrich and chizuk. Divrei seifrim, you have to strengthen, you have to fortify them by making her lose her ksuba. Okay. Then the braisa continues, dover acher, another reason why the difference, zehu maugila vizuhi maugilate. Because in one case, he's the one who convinces her to marry him, and in the other case, she's the one who convinces him to marry her. Meaning, in other words, the Magdila is like this. What happens with an Amon or a Kohen Gadol, or Grusha v'chalutz l'Kohen Hedyot, which one is more likely to talk the other one into, let's get married, let's not worry about the consequences, more likely he's going to do it. Because after all, because on his side, he's not really losing out much from it. Yes, as long as he's married to her, he's also to do the avodah, but no problem. At any point, he can divorce her, or even actually a Mishnah in Bechorah says he can promise that he's going to divorce her, and not have enough from her, and then he's able to go back to do the avodah. So he's not losing anything long term. She loses something long term because she is going to become a halala, so she'll never be able to marry a Kohen, and her children are going to be halalim. So therefore, so which one would it be in the case of an Amon Kohen Gadol, Grusha v'chalutz l'Kohen Hedyot? Which one is more likely to talk the other one into, you know what, let's hang the consequences, let's go ahead with it, more likely to be him. Therefore, we penalize him by making him pay the ksuba in the usual way. On the other hand, when it comes to the Shnia, which one is more likely to convince the other one? It's she, because there's no consequences, so therefore she may say, you know what, it's Shnia, it's also, but let's go ahead and do it anyway. In fact, there is the point, actually, the Gemara mentions in other places that even more than a man wants to get married, a woman wants to get married. So therefore, when there's no consequences, as in the case of a Shnia, it's more likely that she's going to convince him, that she's going to talk him in to saying, go ahead and marry me, even though it's also the Rabban. Because after all, we have no consequences to worry about. So therefore, that would be a reason why she'd forfeit her ksuba. So the Gemara asks, Dobra Acha Man Katonia, which of the Tanoim that we had with Shimon Elazar and we had Rebbe, which one of them is saying this Dobra Acha? So Ikadam Rav Shimon Elazar Katonia. One possibility is its continuation of Rav Shimon Elazar's statement. And he's saying, Umatan Kama. So he's giving a reason for what he said. Mat Umatan. So now, Rav Shimon Elazar had started by saying that whenever the both of them apostle, then we said that there's a ksuba. But now, what does one have to do with the other? What is the fact that he's apostle and she's apostle have to do with anything? The reason is, why konsu oisik ksuba? Why in that case do we penalize him by making him pay the ksuba? Because in that case, he's more likely to convince her to get married because after all, the consequences for him are not as severe as they are for her. Why is it that if both of them are kosher, then we penalize her by making her lose her ksuba, but Neshai Magilata, because she's the one who convinces him. So according to that way of looking at it, this Magila and Magilata is part of the Shimon Elazar's statement. With that, he's explaining why who possible who ksuba should have different consequences in terms of ksuba than who kosher v'hikshay. That's one possibility. Ikadama Rebbe Katanila. Another possibility is that it's continuation of Rebbe's statement. and b'chalutza kapashalei. Now, according to that, because once Rebbe made a statement about divrei Torah versus divrei sofrim, then he came up with a question: what about b'chalutza kapashalei? He had a problem. After all, we mentioned a chalutza l'koyin hedyot, but chalutza d'rabbanan b'isla k'suba. After all, a chalutza is an isur d'rabbanan, and we're saying that she has a k'suba, so it can't just be a difference of d'araisa versus d'rabbanan, because that wouldn't explain the chalutza. So hodur t'omar. Then, according to the second possibility, Rebbe rethought it and says, you know what? Kiven de posel l'med rabbanon, since, after all, he is passeling her med rabbanon. Specifically, he's passeling her from truma de rabbanon. So, therefore, zehu magdilo v'zuhi magdilato. So, in that case, he's more likely to be the one who convinced her to enter into such a marriage, which is also, he might say, you know what? I've got nothing to lose by it. And he convinces her, you know what? It's not so bad, so you'll lose truma de rabbanon, big deal. And he goes and he convinces her to marry him. Therefore, even in that case, for chalutza, even though it is d'rabbanan, we don't need to strengthen it by making her forfeit her k'suba. As opposed to in the case of a shnia, v'zui magilatoi, and then she's the one who convinces him because she figures there's no consequence in being a shnia in a marriage, and therefore she might try to convince him because, as we just said, she'd be more likely to want to get married than he is. And therefore, we would assume that if a marriage was done by Israel like that, where there are no consequences, it's more likely that she convinced him to go with it. And therefore, we make her forfeit uksuba because of that. So, in other words, we have Reb Shimon Elazar's reason, we have Rebbe's reason, we have this Davar Acher, and this Davar Acher can actually be made to work with both Reb Shimon Elazar's reason as well as with Rebbe's reason. Okay. So the Gemara says, my Ika. Vain regular of Shimon Elazar, what's the actual naftamina between their reasons? The answer is, Amar of Chistam, Am Zerasim, a sin of Israel, Ikeminai. The naftamina would be between, you're right, there's no naftamina when it comes to a Kohen's marriages, but when it comes to a Yisrael's marriages, when a Yisrael is marrying a Mamzerasim and a sinner, where there's an Israelav, that would be the naftamina. Mander Amar Daraisa, according to Rebbe, who says that the key difference is whether it's Daraisa or Drabbanon, on Hami Daraisa. Well, Yisrael marrying a Mamzeres is also an Isra Daraisa. Therefore, according to him, she would get a Ksuba. Mander Amar, Neshu Hu Margila. On the other hand, according to Reb Shimon Elazar, that the only reason to pay a Ksuba is when he's the one who convinces her to enter in such a marriage, well, he Margila Lay. Here, it's more likely that she's the one who convinces him, because after all, she's not losing any status by being married to Yisrael, so it's not like she has any incentive to say, let me not get married to you. In the case where a Grusha marries a Kohen, for example, then or an Almona to a Kohen Gadol, let's say she has an incentive not to do it because she becomes a Halal, and therefore that means she's never going to be able to marry a regular Kohen either. But in the case of a Mamzeres marrying Israel, she has nothing to lose by it. She's a Mamzeres anyway. Her children are anyway going to be Mamzerim. In fact, Rashi explains that you have an opinion of Reb Tarfon, which we touched on in the Gemara Uli and on the Sechta, which is in a Mishnah in Kiddushin, that there is actually a way that Mamzerim can become Torah. We talked about the case where a Mamzer can marry a Shifcha, and then the children are considered Avodim. Then he frees those children, and now they're Avodim Meshachrarim, and now they're not Mamzerim anymore. So therefore, she may not mind so much. Okay, so I'll marry Yisrael. My children anyway are going to be Mamzerim. That can't be helped. And the fact that we're going to have a future generation of Mamzerim. Okay, so at least I'll be able to do something for my sons that I'll be able to make them Ois Mamzerim, or to make their descendants Ois Mamzerim by having them marry Shvachas, etc. So therefore, so she's more likely to convince the Yisrael, even though there's an Isser, let's get married anyway, don't worry about what's going to happen with our children, because at least our sons will be able to be Metahar then. So that would be a reason. So therefore, according to the Shimon Elazar's reason, there would be a reason to make her forfeit her k'suba.
But isn't that degrading, having your children marry Shvachas?
Well, yeah, but a mamzer may figure that's the least worst option. At least that way, my children will be at least this way. I have a chance of my children being regular Jews and able to freely marry among the Jewish people. So yes, it might be degrading, but they might be willing to try that in order to be metaher their descendants. Okay. So the Gemara asks, fine. Ula Rabbi Yezer, but what about the opinion of Rabbi Yezer? To Amar Hareza Eved Umanzer, according to Rabbi Yezer, that method of Rabbi Taifin doesn't work. In fact, he says that if a Mamzer were to marry a Shivcha, and then you have children who are Avodim, he says those children would be Avodim and Mamzerim. So therefore, even if you free them from the Avdus, they still remain Mamzerim. So according to him, a Mamzer can never be Matahar, their children anymore. So why would she bother marrying the Yisrael? Why would she convince the Yisrael to marry her? On the contrary, it's going to cause a constant argument. It's going to cause constant friction between them because he's constantly going to be saying, you know what, I could have married a Bas Yisrael and had kosher children, and now all my children are posel, and according to Rabbi Yezer's opinion, I have no way of being matir them. So why would she convince him to enter such a marriage in the first place when she knows that it's going to cause constant friction in their marriage? So holy maybe. So then according to that opinion, she's not going to convince him. So therefore we need a different nafkamina between Shimon Elazar's and Rebbe's reasons according to that. So rather we can answer that according that machlokas between the Shimon Elazar and Rebbe's reasons would apply when he's remarrying his divorcee after she had married somebody else in between, which we know is again a live direct. Manda Amar Daraisa Hanami Daraisa. Rebbe, who says the key difference is whether the marriage is also Daraisa or not. Well, this is also Daraisa. Or Manda Amar Meshul Humagila. According to the Shimon Elazar, that it depends which one convinces the other. Ha he Magulalei. She's the one who's more likely to convince him because again, there's no consequences. Okay. The Gemara asks, Ula Rabbi Akiva do Amar Yesh Mamzer Mechayv Elav. And what about according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, which we've had many times in our Masechta, who says that there can be a Mamzer even from Chayv Elav, meaning that he says that even a case like that of a lab, even though there's a lab of Machzer Gurushasa, even though it's only a lab of Machzer Gurushasa, nevertheless he would say the children are considered Mamzerim, Hole Magul Alev Lamidi, then again she's not going to convince him to enter such a marriage, to remarry her, because their children are going to be Mamzerim, and that's going to be a constant sore point between them. Now, of course, Tosfos says the Gemara could equally well answer that Rabbi Akiva would hold like a paraffin that Yechol Mamzerim Litar. However, the Gemara wants to say that the Gemara wants to make it work out that even if he holds like Rabbi Elazar. Okay, Tosfos also points out, really, actually, according to Rabbi Akiva, anyway, Kedushin are not Tosfos with Chai Vilavin, so there's nothing to talk about a Ksuba anyway. Tosfos says, you're right, we're not really talking about the Ksuba, we're not talking about Mizonis either, we're talking about Peiros and Blois. After all, why should we penalize her if she didn't convince her, so Peiros, for example, he has no business feeding the Peiros, why should we penalize her? So should we penalize her that nevertheless he doesn't have to pay back the Peiros? So that'll be the difference whether Magulalei or whether Magulaihu, which one is convincing the other one to enter into this marriage. So again, so if we say according to Rabbi Akiva that in fact a machzer grushase would produce a mamzer, then she's not going to convince him to enter such a marriage because she knows it's going to be a constant sore point that our children are mamzerim. So that doesn't work either. Ela, I'm going to pop up, but ula l'koyin gadol ikhe b'nai. The nafkamina between Rav Shimon Elazar's and Rebbe's reasons would be if she's a woman who's already had relations and is marrying a koyin gadol. Manda, I'm a daraisa, hanami daraisa. Such a marriage is also daraisa. But there's no consequences. On the other hand, there's no consequences. A Kohen Gadol marries a Ba'ula, he's over an Eser, because he was supposed to marry a Basula, but there's no other Isser involved. Rashi points out there's not the Isser of Zoyna either, because a Zoyna would only be if it was a Be'ila HaSura, and then where there was a Lab, and here was not, there's only an Eser. So, if it's a matter of Daraisa versus not, Rebbe's point, that you have to strengthen dinim d'rabbanan but not dinim d'araisa, then that would be a reason for her to not forfeit her ksuba because here it's something d'araisa. On the other hand, if you say it's a matter of according to Shimon Elazar's reason that she convinces him, well, in this case, she's more likely to convince him. You know what? I may be a ba'ula. Let's get married anyway. What do we have to lose? It's not going to even make our children halalim. It's not going to do anything to my status. It's not going to do anything to your status. So let's go ahead and do that. And therefore, the chachamim might penalize her by making her forfeit her ksuba. Okay, the Gemara says, Ula Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov d'amar yesh cholo mechayv eser. Now, what about according to the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says that a cholo can be produced by chayv eser? So, according to him, exactly that. If a Kohen Gadol marries a non-Basula, their children are cholovim, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So, holei magul alei b'lei midi. Again, she's not going to convince him to get married, because that'll have the consequences that their children are going to be chalalim. So according to him, what would be the nafkamina between the two reasons? So Ella Amar Rav Ashi Machzer Sofek Seitase Ikebinai. Fine, but you can still find the nafkamina between Rebbe's and Rav Shimon Elazar's reasons when he remarries his Sofek Seita. So meaning he was mekanech of her. He said, "Don't be alone with this guy." She went and did that anyway. At that point, she's also to him midaraisa, but until she drinks the meisaita. So now, if he goes and illegally remarries her or continues staying married to her, so now you have the nafkamina. Manda amidaraisa hanami daraisa. If you say that we're talking about that it's a question of whether it's an isur daraisa or not, this is also daraisa. No need to strengthen isur daraisa. Therefore, she can still keep her ksuba. But if you talk about who convinces who, she's the one who's more likely to convince him. Ignore the fact that I was nister with this guy, because after all, if you remarry me, there are no consequences. And therefore, we would say, yes, there should be consequences. She'll forfeit her ksuba, and that way she's less likely to, convince him to do that. Okay. Still, the Gemara says, Ulur Masi ben Chorosh, but what about, let's consider now the opinion of Masi ben Chorosh. He says that when we discuss the definition of Zoyna, as far as a Kohen Gadol, we said that even if they, when they're on their way for her to drink the Meisota, and her husband has relations with her on the way, Asar Zoyna, then according to Masi ben Chorosh, that makes her a Zoyna, then again, she's not going to try to convince him to marry her because she would rather drink the water rather than being potentially posel from being posel a kohuna. Tosfos actually points out that listen, she's going to be anyway posel because we're talking about that he divorced her and now he's remarrying her when he's not supposed to. So as a grusha, she's anyway also to a kohen. So one point is that she doesn't want to be called a zoyna. It's true that she's already posel to a kohen anyway, and she's posel for truma, but still she doesn't want to have the label zoyna fastened on her, which is a very degrading label. So therefore, according to Masi ben Chorosh, given that that's one of the definitions of zoyna, so she's not going to convince her ex-husband to remarry her after having been a suffix soita, because she does lose out from it. She's going to be considered a zoyna. So again, what would be the nafkamina? Ela om ma'abravashi soita vada ikaminahu. The answer is, the final answer, you can find the nafkamina between Rebbe's and Rav Shimon Elazar's reasons when she's a vada soita, meaning that she was actually mizana. So we know that she was mizana. She's also to her husband, Daraisa. So now, her husband is supposed to divorce her. If now her husband illegally goes and remarries her, now you have the nafkamina. If you say it's a matter of daraisa versus darabana, it's also to do daraisa. Therefore, maybe we don't need to strengthen it by making her forfeit her ksuba. On the other hand, if you say it's a matter of who convinces who, she's more likely to convince him, ignore what I did in the past, let's get remarried. After all, there are no consequences. Rashi points out, even according to Rabbi Akiva, who says, Yesh Mamzer Mechai V'Lavin, we established earlier in the Masechta, on the Tesamah days, that everybody agrees that in the case of a Vadei Sota, that in the case of a Sota, Sotok Sota or Vadei Sota, the child is not a Mamzer. And we learned it over there why that is so, but that's the fact. So therefore, in other words, in the case of a Vadei Sota, she already has the name of Mamzer. She already has the name of Zoyna. So therefore, she's not losing anything out by remarrying her husband. So she's more likely to convince him to ignore what he did before and to go ahead and remarry her. And therefore, that might be a reason to penalize her, to make her lose her ksuba. That would be according to Rav Shimon Elazar's reason. Whereas according to Rebbe, the fact is that that's also daraisa, and there's no need to strengthen an isur daraisa. Therefore, according to him, she could get her ksuba.